I never seem to get the gavel, so this will be my gavel tonight. I'm calling this the Writers Advisory Council meeting for April 6, 2016 to order. Welcome everybody, welcome the public, welcome to our membership. We do have a time on the agenda later for a full introduction of new RAC members, but because we do have five people at the table tonight that some of you have never met because this is their first meeting, I want to just go around the room. I'm not going to say their names because I'm going to let them pronounce them in case I would do it wrong. So you get to start. Thank you. Yeah, that's exactly what I was looking for. Yeah. And next. Thank you very much. Now you'll see everybody else introduced later on when we have some time on our agenda, but we wanted to let our speakers go first tonight. Those of you who are familiar with our schedule, we typically have the public comment next, but we're going to table that until after we have our speakers, and then we'll proceed with the rest of the agenda. I'm going to do that. So, I'd like to introduce Mr. Paul Wiedefeld, who is our new general manager. I think you all have seen his face on TV and in the news and lots of comments, and it's our pleasure that he's here with us tonight. So, let you go ahead, and then we'll have a brief time for some questions afterwards. Probably never as much as we'll want, but we'll have a little time.
Thank you so much. I apologize for my voice. I've been, ever since the blizzard, I've been... have had this cold, unfortunately. But I'll be very brief because it's more important, obviously, for me to hear from you. Been on the job just over 4 months. Best job I've ever had. Extremely exciting, energizing. Bit of work to do, but that's all good. And I've met some great people. I literally have talked to thousands of people, writers and different stakeholders. And gotten a good obviously experienced the system on a daily basis myself. Gotten a good sense of some of the issues we're up against. Got a good sense of a lot of the positives. One of the biggest things I've seen since I've been on board is the desire, particularly from the frontline people, to rekindle the pride they've had in the system over the years. Thank you so much. And so I really want to tap into that because at the end of the day, I'm only one person. And unless we get to 13,000 people generally moving in the same direction, it's going to be very, very hard to turn this thing around to what we all want it to be. So with that, I'd be glad to get in any topic you want to. But these are exciting times for sure. But I'm certain that with your help, you know, just one general comment. I'm looking for partners. I've got lots of critics, and that's good. And we should have critics, but I'm also looking for lots of partners, and both internally and externally. So anything you can help me with that, I appreciate it. The another ask I have is I'm looking for talent. I'm trying to bring some new thinking to the agency, and we have some really smart people in the agency already. But I'm also open to recruiting others, and I have I've done a reorganization of the agency 2 or 3 weeks ago, and so there's opportunities there too. So if you know people, that would be great too. Okay, with that, I'd be glad to hear some of your concerns and some of your thoughts, or if you want me to hit on anything in particular, just let me know.
Okay,
and I'll go as long as my voice goes.
Okay, I'm going to start out the questions before I get into it. The new members may not know that if you do want to ask a question, you just do that, and then I'll know that you want to talk. But certainly we want to focus on big picture kinds of questions. But I hope I'm speaking on behalf of everyone here that I think we have 21 partners here for you. And it's important to us that all the things that you've talked about and are wanting to do are so important to the writers that I think you have a really big support family here.
Good.
One thing, my question is that someone very nice gave us the list of the customer accountability report mm-hmm. information. And my question with all of the news about, you know, the plan that you've worked out that's really addressing a lot of things that are important to you and what you see for the success, if there are specific ways that we can help, we would love to participate in things that are on these pages that relate to the writers, things where we can add value. So mm-hmm. if we wanted to know if we have your support to do that so that we can talk to the relevant people, or Jason can on our behalf talk to the relevant people on the staff so that sure. we can participate on some of those things that the writer point of view is key to what it's doing.
First of all, I mean, obviously, thank you for all of you for your time. You are an advisory committee to the board, so I think that's an important role for the board to hear from you directly and not filter through me. So I think that's, you know, I think that is a big purpose of the organization. So I think if you serve that, that serves them well. I know that you have a work program with a number of things in it, so, you know, I mean, that's something that you all came up with, I assume. So chip away at that as you see fit. I would suggest that you focus it on, you know, some of those. I'm sure that you can prioritize it in some way. I'll just throw out one just based on the the customer accountability report. One of the things I'm trying to do here is what I did at BWI Airport was there is I had over 200 volunteers at the airport, and they would be there from 5 a.m. to 11 at night. And they were people that loved aviation or loved the community or engaged, and they would give their time. So we're trying to create that. I've met with different groups throughout the region that, you know, they're hungry to do it. I think we're calling it MVP, I think, is the program as we're framing it. But so, I mean, obviously you have connections in the community. So if there's anything you can do to help sort of beef that up a little bit. And these are just what I envision. I'm going to let it play out. But, you know, you live in a community. This is your station. And if you can give some time just to help, particularly during peak tourism seasons and things like that, help with people, just as they get lost or they're trying to figure out the vending machines or whatever they're trying to do, anything on that would be helpful.
Okay, thank you. So we can open up the question period to, okay, we have one person ready, Chris. surprise, it's Chris's first.
I'm known as a squeaky wheel.
Is that right? Okay, yeah. Good.
I don't want to speak on behalf of the RAC because I'm not allowed to, but I would venture to say that everyone sitting at this table is interested in fixing WMATA. Mm-hmm. We are not going to be harsh critics mm-hmm. in that, shut it all down, let's fill the tunnels with cement kind of right, stuff. Right. That was my favorite thing from the last week. It's a lot of cement. So we're here to help. And really, that's my only point. I don't really have a question. It's just so much of a point to make, so you can rest your voice. Riders are not cargo, and I think you understand that coming from the aviation background and dealing with people at airports. We want to be a part of the process. One thing that was kind of concerning was the conversation over the last week about potential shutdowns. Mm-hmm. And that kind of blew up. All the way up to the New York Times, everyone covered it. I think the ridership shouldn't be blindsided by things like that. We would like to be kind of ahead of that. If that's something that you guys think needs to happen, then we should have a conversation about that and discuss how that would look before the New York Times compares us to all the other problems in the world. Mm-hmm. So that's really my only point, is that we're here to help. We want to help. The RAC in the past has not been a large presence. We've provided feedback as requested, but that certainly doesn't mean that can't change going forward. And we're all super eager to help you.
Very good. Thank you.
Clarence.
Mine kind of picks up from there, knowing that it was a very courageous thing that you did, I mean, being the metropolitan city and closing down the metro for that one, but also being very frank with the public and with RAC about that it being necessary going forward. I think we understand, like, safety is the top priority, and we don't want to ever put riders in a situation where they feel or they may not feel safe in there. But I think there's either some means of, if these things are happening in the future, that there's a better sense of, like, coordinating and how that's going to flow down, and then also backup systems that might be in place is another kind of question I have, because it was sort of like it's just down and then figure out some other things. We're just knowing if we are moving down a pathway where this more intensive work is going to require routes or lines to be shut down for an extended period of time, that we give full consideration to making accommodations available for others to sort of adjust their schedules that they are planning in. Because so for where I work, it was just sort of, you know, our university started sending out memos about making a special leave day for other people, and people were just kind of like, sort of like, I don't think, as much as safety being priority number one, that customer service piece was something that people felt really frustrated with.
If I could, I think there's two issues here. And one other one I just wanted to clarify, even though I've been in the aviation business, was in the aviation business for 10 years. I did run a transit system before, so I know that it's people that were moving, and I've been in the transit business for 25 years. there's two issues on the closing. One was an emergency closing, and that was, you know, something that, you know, there was no time, in effect, you know, to get out a whole lot. It literally was happening in real time. So I had to make that decision. I had to make it quickly. And, you know, there wasn't a whole lot there. I think it does speak, though, to the region in that, you know, we do prepare for things like that, you know, not from a transit perspective per se, but, you know, we live in a world where in an instant things can change. And we all have to be prepared for that. And I thought, from my perspective, the region actually performed very well, you know, in a very short period. I was dealing with a lot of the departments of transportation. I mean, you went to Union Station, there were announcements being made constantly. I mean, just across the whole, you know, there were signs up on all the information boards on the highways of what was going on. And obviously, we reached out to the media. And, you know, as a region, you know, we performed fairly well in dealing with something that came, you know, very quickly upon us, which, you know, the reality is we may have to face that. So from that perspective, I thought, you know, it went fairly well, lessons we learned for sure. In terms of any future type of closing, that's a different issue. One of the experiences or one of the lessons I got from that experience 2 weeks ago is a bit of a frustration that we tend to move from crisis to crisis. You know, we're dealing with this, and the next thing you know, we're dealing with this, then we're dealing with that. So we're spending our resources inefficiently. We're sending mixed signals to our customers and inconsistent. What I am doing is I want to step back and think through what is the approach that we have to do to get this system in a state, a true state of good repair. I think that the last 4 or 5 years, the way we've been doing was fine, but I just don't think it's going forward. I think there's some other ways we could do this. And I think it does lead us to dealing with some tough issues. But the reality is, you know, we have some tough challenges in front of us with a two-track system. You know, when you have to get in and do some things, it's going to, you know, have an impact. And we can't, as an agency, I don't think it's helpful for us to paper over some of those issues. That does not mean I'm trying to cause pain. It's just that, you know, I want to be just as transparent with what we're up against. In terms of any closures, if it comes to that, we will give as much notice as possible. Now, if it's safety related and something comes up emergency, unfortunately, I may have to act as I did the other day, but I do not want to ever do that again. That is not the goal. We are working on a plan, which I said I will get out in the next month or so, which lays out some of those different options we could do. One of the things I've heard repeatedly in talking to the hundreds of customers and stakeholders is, you know, the weekend service, I hate it, I won't use it because it's unreliable. Okay, so then maybe we should think about how we do the weekend service, right? You know, we run service to very late at night, and we give ourselves 3 hours, you know, to do. I mean, if you just do the math, I don't know how many hours are there in a week, 168 or whatever, 168. And we're running 148 or whatever the number is, right? So, I mean, just when we do the math, it gets very difficult. So the way we've been trying to do it is, you know, we're trying to squeeze in and get in and do things. And, you know, we've impacted the customer by that methodology. So I think it's worth, at a minimum, a discussion of some other ways we could do that to try to let's get through this, get it to where we want it to be, and then let's show you how we're going to maintain so we don't slip back into this situation. So I think that's a healthy discussion to have. That's what I'll be coming up with shortly.
If I can make one comment, too, in follow-up, because I know you had some people suggest or question, well, why not wait till the weekend? But I know that based on what you saw, that I understand that if we waited till the weekend, we were putting customers at risk for 3 days. And if anything had, you know, heaven forbid that anything would have gone wrong in the days leading up to the weekend, it would not have, you would have had no support at all.
No, I mean, you know, on the one hand, it was a very difficult decision because I understood what it meant for this community and what it meant for the region. On the other hand, it was a fairly straightforward decision for me, which is, you know, I am not going to put you or any of your family at risk, nor mine. And so to wait, you know, that just was not an option for me.
Also would like to express my appreciation for your courage to take hard decisions and being honest with the community as far as what's going on with the agency. That I think those are characteristics that were sorely needed here, and appreciate that you are sort of changing the way things are being done here. I have two concerns. One is that I guess I see, since I'm a civic activist in Montgomery County, a real disconnect between the planning community and WMATA, in the sense that there seems to be this perception that Metro has unlimited excess capacity. So examples of this are that last year the Virginia DOT did a study looking at Route 1 in Virginia, and one of the recommendations is by 2040 having another 3-mile extension of Metro Rail from the Huntington Station down to Hybla Valley, when we know already, for example, the addition of the Silver Line has stressed the Blue Line's capacity and whatnot has affected that. In Maryland, there's some state senators that want to study extending the Red Line out to Frederick. In addition, also in Montgomery County, we have what's called subdivision staging policy, in which we have thresholds related to transportation infrastructure, and if developments exceed those transportation capacities, future development is held until the infrastructure is expanded. One of the things the county planners there are talking about doing is around metro stations, removing those restrictions. So you can just build whatever you want and you pay an impact fee and whatnot, but the assumption again is that Metro has infinite excess capacity, so we can just keep adding more people regardless of what the system can handle. And so I think that perhaps one of the important messages for this agency is to communicate that given the system's condition, you can't just keep adding more development and more people and expect it to absorb this without the kinds of investments that the agency's talking about needing here, and that ultimately there is a fixed limit on how much can be added to the system without it just totally failing. The other point that I guess I would like to raise with you is the importance of rider-oriented transportation planning, that transportation agencies, particularly transit agencies, are so siloed that very often people who then have to go through multiple modes and multiple agency services and whatnot kind of get lost in the cracks. Recently there was a study done in San Francisco that found that if there was better coordination across the many agencies that operate in the San Francisco Bay Area, you might actually end up with a 6% increase in ridership because people are able to just complete their entire trips more efficiently. San Diego did a similar kind of analysis last year of looking at not just usage within the independent systems, but across the entire trips that people are trying to make, and better coordinating the services so that it's easier to make the entire trip, not just from one service to another. Houston, Texas did a similar kind of thing last year with their data-driven analysis in reimagining transit. And I think that that's one of the things that really needs to happen in the D.C. region, is to get past these silos where people don't recognize what riders are actually having to deal with in trying to make an entire trip.
Right.
Thanks, Jim. Hi. I just want to throw in the idea we need, if we have to do any more emergency shutdowns, since I'm from Arlington County, and our issue, biggest issue, is that if we shut down the Metro rail, Metrobus cannot cross us over to DC. There are not enough routes that take us to DC. So we're going to have to then work something out with Metrobus to give us more routes to different places in DC, because basically during the shutdown, I didn't have to go to work, but if I had to go to Capitol Hill, it would have taken me 3 buses and 2 hours. So that has to be balanced. You cannot, you know, we don't have the service bus-wise to absorb that kind of thing on a, you know, I'm not talking on a regular basis because I'm thinking emergency, but in any case, it's the kind of thing that people, a lot of people can't afford to be taking vacation days or anything like that. So that has to be worked out.
Yeah, and again, you know, that is not what we want to do. We do not want to be shutting down the system for any purpose if we can do it, and definitely not for emergencies, because that means something else is going wrong. So we don't want to be doing that. And if I could just, James, real quick, I understand what you're saying, but you know, I think it's, you know, it's much larger than just us. You know, it's a land use, you know, issue. It's a changing travel behavior issue. It's all those things that we have to start to consider as we think about the future of the system. It just can't be us with a narrow point of view. I think it's going to be a much broader discussion. And I know that obviously WashCog plays a large part in that, and all the local governments do. So I think it's got to be done from that perspective, and not just a metro-driven here's the answer type of thing. I just don't think that's realistic. Definitely.
Thank you. I'll be brief. I just wanted to, first of all, point out that one of the drivers for me to come join the council, my interest, was I have a safety background. We spoke briefly about that. And I believe truly that the time of an emergency is not the time that the public, the passengers, should be trying to figure out how to evacuate, what they should be doing. I know we have placards in there. So I see an opportunity to improve those processes. And I would also like to thank you for taking the action of shutting down the Metro. I also am a true believer in, we have paying passengers. They're paying for a safe ride. They're paying for safe travel, and that's what they should be receiving in the end. Sequences, you know, happen to flow very nicely because per Lorraine's comments, I had one criticism that and I know it was a short notice as far as the shutdown, but you know, the government agencies and DC employers, I would assume, I know the government agencies are prepared to have people with the ability to telework. The way it happened on that particular day was that people had left the office, had already been home, didn't have their laptop. So the one I think piece of advice was like, some coordination would have really helped, and people would have been prepared, and the agencies would have had that opportunity to notify their personnel that the next day could have been a telework day. But thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Colin Rouge, I'm an at-large member here in D.C. I'm going to feel probably a little guilty asking you a very specific question, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Sure.
I think you've so far done a great job in terms of trying to build goodwill, recognizing the fact that, you know, Metro's problems to date have impacted ridership numbers. And I think you've been trying to identify what the kind of immediately apparent pinch points are from a customer service and reliability standpoint, in addition to trying to address these much larger and long-term issues related to safety and planning. But you know, one of the issues that the RAC has been discussing for quite some time is the issue of the blue line. Mm-hmm. and the fact that riders on the blue line are experiencing headways that are double that of every other line during rush hour. And, you know, it seems to me that that is one of those immediately apparent pinch points from a customer service perspective. So I'm wondering if, you know, you have any immediate plans to make adjustments in order to ease the situation for those riders in hopes of maintaining and perhaps even building that ridership back up.
Right. Good question. Yeah, I mean, that is one area that we have to take, a fresh look at as well, you know. The overall strategy there. I'm not doing some preliminary work on that right now, so I don't want to commit to anything right now. Just given some other things I'm trying to get settled. But clearly, you know, we have to take a look at that. I've heard it repeatedly. You know, it is what it is, as we know with the constraints of the tunnel. But I think it is time. You know, for me, I'm just asking some basic questions, so I will do that. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Goffert, that was my cop out because I know you told me what your first name rhymes with, and I've already forgotten what the word was. So,
Steve Sagofard, DC. Thank you so much again for all of your leadership so far, and in being, you know, honest in helping to rebuild our metro system. I for one believe it's a really fantastic system. Mm-hmm. Having seen many other transit networks around the world, I do believe. Is and also has potential to be, you know, mm-hmm. even better than it currently is. So my first quick question is, based on what you know so far, could you give us a sense of likelihood about whether a long-term shutdown, you know, like 3 to 6 months alluded to in the media, how likely that might be based on what you know? And then my second question is, you had mentioned in a few weeks you'll be coming out with a plan, mm-hmm. which you think are the necessary steps. After that plan is announced, and you said that that would be a good opportunity for some discussion, what types of opportunities will there be for the public at large to, you know, have input, you know, to comment on that? I assume there's going to be a lot of opinion,
sure.
you know, on both sides, and I guess I think people really appreciate the opportunity to get feedback once your initial plans are.
Sure.
And we're here to work with you.
Right. Let me just talk on the long-term shutdown. I haven't seen anything from what I've seen to date that leads me to that, you know, an extended shutdown of that sort. I think the chairman has, again, he's extremely passionate about the system and getting it fixed. I think he was, you know, just, you know, sort of, you know, put something out there, but I think he was just driving home the point that, guess what, we can't continue the way we're doing. We're starting to, you know, face some serious issues here. So that's, you know, I think it was good that he did that. In terms of, you know, it's a balance of, I've got to, you know, we're doing a lot of work out there now. I will, in effect, propose certain things that we'd like to do differently. I think, I don't think I'll ever get 100%. I'm not sure I'll get 90%. I'm not sure I'll get 80%. I'm not sure what I'll get. But the reality, I really feel we have to do something different. I really do. I just don't think that we're going to get to where we want to get to in the approach that we're following. So I'll be very transparent about the approach that I want to move forward with. But I think that we've got to move forward with something different to get us where we need to be as quickly as we can get us there. So that's what will come forward.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm a customer service advocate, and I think customer service is so important to any transportation system involving people, whether it's airports or buses or, in this case, metro. But I think it becomes even more important when the system is not living up to the customer's expectations. We lose customers. People grumble, mm-hmm. People are unhappy. Happy riders are really, really important. And I think that when you have happy riders, at least you have a sense of people, a sense that Metro is trying, people will overlook some of its shortcomings. So my question is, are you thinking about, you know, impacting the culture of the system, of the employees, in terms of making customer service, you know, priority number one, or at least priority number two.
Yeah, I think there's two things that I think will get to the customer. One is just the basic service reliability. I think, you know, I think if we get that, that helps, it goes a long way. The harder one is the culture issue. What I found was a little surprising here is a bit of a disconnect between the management level and the frontline employees. And without that, we are not going to move this agency very far, in my estimation, that, you know, until I get, you know, all 13,000 people, again, sort of moving in a certain direction. So I have purposely, and will continue, and it's just the way I manage, is I reach out to the frontline employees to understand their issues, because guess what? They know a lot more than I will ever know about that day-to-day experience. And what I found is a yearning for that, to basically restore the pride in this agency and in their jobs. I mean, these are not robots, right? They go home to their community, they read the paper, they look at the news, and they're seeing the way they're being portrayed, and they take exception to that, which I think is very positive. Let me just give you one example. When I see an employee, I generally, you know, we'll talk and introduce ourselves and whatever, but I generally ask them, you know, if there's something I could do for them, what would it be? And, you know, sometimes it's, you know, it's around their world, you know, and not necessarily the customer's world. But I had a gentleman at Farragut said to me, he says, do you know where the elevator is here? And I said, no, I don't. And he says, well, do you have time? I said, sure. He said, let me show you. So he took me up the escalator outside around the corner up Connecticut Avenue and showed me where the entrance to the elevator is. He said he had a customer about 2 weeks before then that it was raining. The customer was in a wheelchair and had gone around the block twice trying to find the elevator entrance. And it's marked, but it's in an alcove next to the CVS. It looks like it's part of the CVS. It almost looks like it would be where you would, you know, bring supplies in. And so the fact that this station manager could have told me about his work conditions, his pay, his schedule, all these things that, you know, that he could have raised, he raised the customer service experience that he had experienced and that he wanted me to be aware of. So that's how you change the culture. You know, you basically listen to people like that, and then you follow up. So literally, we now have signs going up there in design, and we have to go through some permitting and all that, but we're going to put up, you know, different signs so people understand that. So that's what I'm looking for from all the employees, is to, you know, to think of it that way. Based on that conversation, I've actually sent out a note to all of our station managers and asked them if they had 6 weeks, if there was something that I could do in 6 weeks, what would it be? You know, and so I'm getting lots of really good ideas. A lot of them, are things that impact them individually, but I'm getting all kinds of things that impact customers. So I think that's, you know, that's how you start to change the culture. You listen to the people that actually do the business, and you react, and you give them feedback. You can't solve all of their issues, but you can move on a lot of them.
Thank you for your time. Anything else you want to add before we let you out of here?
No, again, just a thank you for your time and for what you do. And again, don't lose sight of the role that you play for the board. I mean, you are the sounding board for them to hear from the writers directly. So I hear from them every day. and I go out to reach out to them every day. But it's more important, or just as important, that you reach out to the board.
Well, right, and they look to us to you know, be a filter to say these are really important things, mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe set priorities that we see. But they also expect that we do interact with the staff so that we are not operating in a vacuum. And so we partner a great deal with your staff in order to investigate and research things so that the end result is either we understand it better, that's it, or maybe we have a recommendation or two to put with it. Okay. So thank you.
All right, thank you so much.
Okay. And hope your voice comes back soon, because you're asked by too many people to talk all the time. Okay, now our next challenge is, I think, do we have three of our people? Do we have three of you here tonight for the two or three of the emergency team?
Actually, we have four.
We have four. Okay, so we have two choices. We can either rearrange ourselves a little bit, or we can spread you out in the crowd. Two. Okay, well, we got a place for you there. Oh, can we
could we just maybe fit another chair in? Yeah, that would help. Thank you very much. So let me start by saying that we have two representatives of our within the Metro Transit Police Department. We have the Office of Emergency Management, and we have two of them with us tonight. And they kind of triggered by Major's interaction with Mr. Hester, who ran what I think of as the one who runs the emergency drill that we went to at Eisenhower a few weeks ago, and thought that there was information that would be of interest to all of the RAC, not just those of us that were there at that particular drill. So I haven't had a chance to really talk to you. Do you have a presentation of what you would like to? And then we'll have some questions. I think we have, just depending on how long you have, we'll have some questions at the end.
Okay.
Thank you. I knew I saw him somewhere. He's just too timid to come up here. I mean, but he has that loudspeaker all the time at the drill. I never thought of him as of a timid man. Welcome. Oh. Will has been at all four since we knew about him. He's not one of ours. He might be Chris Barnes. Yes, also known as Major John. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Pat's hit, yeah.
Just talk to you guys a little bit about kind of what our office does, specifically in the training and exercise program. So we have first slide. Next slide, there we go. Kind of OEM's mission is what we do is we provide support and some of our emergency expertise during Metro-related emergencies. And we do this through a couple of ways, through preparedness, which is our training and exercise program. Denton runs the response side of it, so his guys and him are responding to these emergencies that we have. We certainly try to recover out of these emergencies as soon as we can, trying to get some type of service back, either single tracking or normal service as soon as we can. And then we look to mitigate what can we do better the next time. A lot of the preparedness that we do involves a lot of the local jurisdictional first responders, the transit police, the WMATA staff, and some of our partners, federal partners as well. Next slide, please, on that. We do this through a couple of ways. We do our classroom training, which we kind of focus on emergency response, both on the rail side and the bus side. We do hands-on drills throughout the years that we've been doing this, simulations, and then we do some large-scale exercises. That's kind of how we run our shop, trying to prepare the region for coming into the metro emergencies. Next slide, please. All right, so one of the things that we started in 2014 with the arrival of the first phase of our Silver Line is we're kind of required by policy to do at least one multi jurisdictional exercise per year annually for our system safety program plan. When we opened up the Silver Line, I wanted to do three full-scale exercises. I wanted two on the fire rescue side and one from the law enforcement side. We were able to do two of those because with some of the, delays in getting the track to us to do these exercises, the first one that we wanted to do was a tunnel exercise out there, the little section of tunnel that's between Tyson's Corner going out toward Greensboro out there. And we wanted Fairfax County to simulate a tunnel exercise, a fire in a tunnel to see what that would be like. Well, we couldn't do that, but we did a tabletop one. So that was the first one that we did in October of, I think we did that in October 13 is when we did that drill. But then we did another actually full-scale exercise, which involved an aerial exercise, which was up on that aerial structure that runs out by Tyson's Corner, which was challenging for the troops to do that. And then we did an active shooter exercise that was out at the Wheelie Avenue station, involved law enforcement, not only the transit police, but also Fairfax County. We involved the MWA folks as well. Combination with that, our bomb squad was doing a little exercise at the Wheelie Avenue station, but kind of off-site with some suspicious packages. Well, they were actually in the station, then they had a vehicle-borne device as well that they were dealing with. So that was in preparation for opening up the Silver Line in 2014. All right, next slide. Regional exercise that we came into, we did a transportation seminar in 2014 with the regional leadership, and it really talked pretty much about a system-wide shutdown, if we had a system-wide shutdown, which we just experienced not too long ago, as a lot of you know. We did a hazmat tabletop. We had a hazardous material incident that was in Alexandria that affected the Van Dorn Metro Station and how we worked around that. With the District of Columbia, we did some multiple scenarios, a tabletop exercise with that one. And then April of last year, we did an exercise at the Greenbelt Metro, which some of you attended, where we kind of combined an exercise where we had a train that was stalled between two stations. But primarily that exercise was dealing with an evacuation of the city that came out to the Greenbelt Metro and then was taken to a relocation center, reunification center that Prince George's County had set up. And that's all part of that transportation exercise series. So that's kind of what we did last year and finished up with that. Next slide. And then we got into our quarterly exercises program. You know, after LaFont Plaza incident that we had back in January of last year, part of the some of the action items was to come up with a quarterly exercise series that we did. So Greenbelt was the first one that we did, and then we did one in the District of Columbia, and we're trying to rotate this around the jurisdictions to try to touch all the jurisdictions. So in August we did the Stadium Armory, where we put a train in between Stadium Armory and Potomac Avenue. We had some issues with the train. We couldn't move it, and we did an evacuation of the folks from the train into the station platform. In December of last year, we went to Forest Glen. This was a Montgomery County exercise where we put a train down in the tunnel. We did an evacuation there as well with folks coming off that train. And really, I think that one started a little bit early by the train operator, if I'm not mistaken, where we had some of the folks coming off a little sooner than we wanted, but we went into the drill. And also at that exercise, our bomb squad was doing a partnership with Montgomery County on a suspicious item that was on a bus up in the parking lot. So we're kind of doing them simultaneously. They weren't part of the same exercise, but we did them both on that day on the Sunday. And then just recently here, on the 13th of March, we're down in Alexandria, and we did that exercise down there where we simulated a train derailment with about 150 people on board of that train. We did an evacuation to the station with that. Kind of a mass casualty incident that Alexandria Fire Department was kind of the lead on that, but they brought in MWA from the Airports Authority, and they also brought in Prince George's County. I think Arlington came down there too, and Fairfax too came down there to assist with that one. All right, so that's kind of what we've done up to date. And then when we go into June, we're going to be doing a Fairfax County exercise, and I want to go back to the tunnel that we never got to do the tunnel. So I want to go back to that one and let them play that little tunnel section out there that they have at Tyson's. And then soon after that, we're going to do kind of a regional exercise. It's going to be on the Yellow Line Bridge, and that's going to be between the District of Columbia, Arlington County, certainly the Pentagon. Folks will be involved, that park police will be involved in that as well. And we haven't done, over the river exercise. We did the last one, I think, in 2007. So we want to get back to doing that and do an evacuation off the bridge out there. So we're just continuing that exercise series. And all this is to prepare the region for when we do have an incident. As you well know, we do have incidents here to get prepared when they're called for and things like that. We have a very good team. We're very well networked in the region with all the local fire departments. It's difficult for us to train everybody at the same time, and that's kind of rotating around the region with the different fire departments. And then we're going to try to do as many of drills that we can where we're crossing a jurisdictional line. So with the Yellow Line Bridge, Arlington to D.C., we're going to try to do one up at Friendship heights where we're going to kind of be between Montgomery County and D.C., you know, I mean, where we share the boundary line so we can get the most bang for the buck. Because getting the track time is tough for us to do that. These drills are usually held on Sunday mornings, and the reason that we do it on Sunday mornings is because that's the least disruptive to the rail system. And we're actually getting mainline. That's kind of why we do that. So we can clear out of there usually by 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon before the system gets busy. So that's kind of our exercise program for that. All right, next slide, if you would. Another thing that we're doing is we're developing station evacuation, response and evacuation plans. Back in 2012, we had three pilot stations that we did. DuPont Circle was one of them. We did Roslyn and we did New Carrollton. That led into 25 stations in 2014 that we did these evacuation plans for, and we've got reasonable monies to complete the remaining 66 stations. And these plans are going to be shared with the jurisdictions, and this is basically a station plan that they have of the station layout, station profile, hazards in the station, if there's any, where we think the a bus shuttle would be located at these stations. And it's really for the first responders to come in there and use. They'll have it when they respond to these stations. So everybody is kind of on the same page. So we're pretty excited about those plans because we didn't have those before. All right, next slide. And then as we move on, we're developing some computer-based training for the jurisdictions as well, just Metro Systems basics, because as we go through the attrition, the fire departments and even the police departments around go through an attrition side where they're getting new people in. Well, sometimes we just have to go back to the basics and just redo some of the basics. So part of this computer-based training is going to talk about the Metro basics. Unified command is also a big part of it, is when everybody gets together to make unified decisions on how they're going to handle these Metro incidents. Scene safety at these Metro incidents is certainly a big part of it as well, so we keep everybody safe. Emergency operations in the Metro environment. You know, how do you operate safely in the Metro environment? We have that. And then evacuation of the cars and the stations. How do we effectively do that? So these are going to be computer-based training that's going to be given out to the jurisdictions to use. And I think we're also creating a Metro 100 computer-based training for the WMATA staff. It's going to talk about Incident Command, NIMS, the National Incident Management System, ICS, Incident Command System. So we're all kind of on the same page when we're responding to these incidents. So next slide. Okay. So that's kind of what our office does. Last year, I'll tell you, we trained over 4,500 first responders in this region between police and fire in this region. I think, 6,700 probably total for the year. So the guys did a really, and gals did a really good job as far as getting out and reaching out to those jurisdictions. And we're trying to involve more of folks in these exercises. As you saw at the Eisenhower Avenue one, 150 people was a pretty big deal. And that's more realistic for what these first responders are going to see when they're coming to an incident in these tunnels. They're not going to see 40 people on a train. They're going to see maybe 1,000 people on a train that's going to be coming out, and then they have to deal with that. So we're trying to make it as realistic as possible, you know, with the triage, simulated injuries. We may be introducing a little smoke on some of the ones coming up in the future to see how they'll deal with that and things. But we're just trying to keep people up to par where they need to be. And certainly we're looking for, you know, certainly any types of opportunities for improvement. One of the biggest things that we've seen, I guess some of the commonalities, is the fact that when some of the first responders get to these trains and they're encountering some folks with disabilities, access functional needs, is they're really not engaging them. And we've talked about that, really not engaging them like we think they should be engaging them as about how can I best move you, you know, if there's any injuries on you, what's the best way, rather than just coming in and just say, hey, you got to go this way, follow me, or whatever, I'll guide you, I'll put you on a cart, you know, to pull you out of there. So trying to stress with them and really talk to these folks when you get there and find out what is the best way to handle them. If they have a particular disability, what's the best way to move them, you know what I mean, and engage them in conversation. So that seems to be a common theme that we're seeing out there. Communication is always a problem that we've had out there. I think on the last couple drills that we had, certainly we're looking at the radios, how the radios are working in the underground portion of the system, and that seems to be improving. But we're also going to be redoing all the radio systems, the underground system as well, coming up here in the next few years. So that's a good thing. Okay. So with that, we'll take any questions you might have.
Okay. I'm going to just somehow go first again. I didn't even put my little sign up. I'm excited to hear about the 66 stations that you're going to evacuate. Is that a schedule? Is there a use for us in that plan where we can participate as people to be evacuated, or are you going to be doing it with riders? Actual riders that are there.
Part of the drill and exercise program is to use those evacuation plans in the exercise and program. So the first responders are going to be using those plans that we've established because they've all put them together. There's like, I think, how many agencies we've got involved in? Like 20, 25 or 30 different groups are involved in putting those plans together with the individual jurisdictions of where these stations are. So everybody's in agreement that this is how we should do that. Now, based on the incident, it may not go that way, you know what I mean, depending on what the incident is. But for the most part, we're going to try to adhere to those plans.
Will each of the jurisdictions be getting their own people to be evacuated?
So you're asking, are we going to?
Yeah. Are you going to populate the station with actors like in the other drills?
Well, we are always using as many volunteers as we can for our exercises. We don't have a plan per se now to actually test one of these particular plans yet. That's something we've talked about. In Montgomery County, they asked us to try and do a full-scale evacuation of Bethesda was the station we were talking about.
Right.
So that's on our radar. We don't have a solid plan for that yet because that takes a lot of people.
Okay, but please think of us when you're ready to have a schedule.
Absolutely.
If the jurisdictions would have some of us along, that would be great for us.
They never have any complaints about any
good.
people that want to participate.
Yeah. Okay. Next question for Major.
Thanks for being here, gentlemen and lady. First responder training is fantastic. I'd advocate for often more every time. But one thing I'd like you to incorporate in the training is a little bit more customer service. I participated in the drill in March, and a lot of people were talking about how the first responders were doing their jobs. They're learning what they need to do to get people off and on. But no one communicated with the riders. And speaking as a rider advocate, we need to know what's going on. As a rider, we need to be calmed. We need to be informed. We need to be instructed, really, and I didn't see a lot of that on the last drill, and we've spoken before, and I'm from Orlando, so when there's an emergency drill, it involves Disney, and Disney actually puts people on the trains or the bus or the disabled vehicle to calm people, to be the communicator. So something I'd like to see in some of these drills is not just the training of the first responder to save lives, but the training of the first responders and the drivers and or whomever to actually speak to the riders. Let us know what's going on. A friendly voice.
Okay.
So it'll help you, believe me, if you had one liaison between the riders, the crowd that you're trying to get off, and the first responders to really get people going. So so the communication with the folks with disabilities, very important, but it's not just them. It's especially them, but it's also the rest of us riders that need to know what's going on. So if on these next drills, have somebody be the liaison or have somebody or teach all of your responders to go through and calm people.
Well, we'll certainly incorporate that in our training and emphasize that point to them. And when we take your feedback, which I'm sure you provided, we take all that feedback and we incorporate it into an after-action report, which gets distributed not only to the jurisdiction that participated or, you know, where we did the exercise, in this case Alexandria, but it goes to all the jurisdictional fire departments. So they get all the lessons learned, and then hopefully they're taking them and applying them. So we'll certainly make sure we include that feedback, and we'll include it in our training as well.
Okay. Also, I want to encourage you folks, when you're having drills, to ask us to one of those drills, not just the physical drills, but I notice you're doing classroom drills as well, just to get our feedback from riders, our representation from riders. That's what the RAC's for. So I encourage you to include us and talk to Barbara here about trying to set something up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Let's see if I can move this a little bit closer. Thanks. Earlier you had talked a little bit about communication, and if I understand correctly, the cell repeaters are supposed to be completed by 2020. And so in the 4 interim years, can you give us a better idea of how you're handling the communication when cell phones and other kinds of communication are spotty?
Yeah, I think you'll find that, and you guys probably know this, that we put cell coverage in the stations, but we have not put that in between the tunnels yet. That neutral host project that was here a couple years back never completed that part of it. So part of this new radio system that we're putting in is they're going to run the cell lines as well when they do that, so we can have that coverage in between the stations. I will tell you this, as far as the radio coverage goes, is that not only is the Metro radio maintenance people out there weekly testing the underground system, but also the jurisdictions are doing that as well. In the District of Columbia, the Office of Unified Communications is checking it once a week, their underground portion of it, and then the other jurisdictions are checking it once every 2 weeks, and they're reporting back to Metro any problems that they have. In fact, there's an interactive program that they have where it's almost like an email that the jurisdictions provide to Metro, and it automatically populates not only our work order to fix the problem, but also displays on the map that's in our rail operations control center. And the jurisdictions have a map as well. It's called a radio outage display map that tells exactly what the status is of the public radio communication system that's underground that each of the jurisdictions have. So we kind of, it's really been improved because we have kind of a real-time idea of what's going on out there in the system. And if a certain segment is down, not only do the jurisdictions know that, but we know that as well, and we can talk to them during these actual events to tell them that the communications is lost. Okay, but I think we have to get the antenna cabling in the tunnels and then hook it into the existing system down there for those cell phones to work the way we want them to. Okay.
Thank you. I really turned up this one tonight. First of all, thank you for the work you're doing and reaching out to people with disabilities. There was a plug I've made over the last few years to open it up to the community of people with disabilities so that we get more people with disabilities and particularly service animals involved in these drills. In reading email over the last week, I ran across a drill that's happening on May 18th. I think D.C. Department of Homeland Security. Are you familiar with that?
Do you know where it's
at? Yeah. I don't have that much information. Yes, D.C.
A citywide exercise?
I think so, yeah. They mentioned rail. They mentioned bus.
CSX.
CSX, okay. They weren't rail specific, so I didn't know if it involved anything that you guys were supposed to be working with.
Okay, not that we're aware of on the Metro side.
Right, when I sent the notice to the Office of ADA Programs so they could find out. They didn't know anything about it either. So I didn't know if it involved you. That's just interesting that they wouldn't. Second question, when we talked in January, we had individuals from Maryland and D.C. and I think Virginia Department of Homeland Security that were interested in working with you to standardize the people working with people with disabilities. Has that been coordinated yet, or have they been in touch?
Yes, sir. No, we are actively working with both Cecilia and Dolores Scott. They're on our exercise planning team.
Beautiful.
And they're assisting us with the computer-based training. Dolores was actually at the exercise we had at Eisenhower a couple weeks ago.
Beautiful. Great.
So we are pushing forward with that initiative.
Wonderful. Good resources. That way we'll get good information that's well thought out, well presented, and coordinated. And I think they were also supposed to be bringing on somebody in Virginia who is going to be the Virginia.
Right. They're working. Whenever Virginia gets that taken care of, we're going to incorporate them as
Beautiful.
Well.
Keep them busy. Great. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So.
Hi. Thanks for being here. As a writer, I feel safer when I see these pictures, and the fact that you're doing this work makes me feel better, especially with all this news that's going on nowadays. I was wondering if any of these emergency drills, I know you have photos and proof that this is all occurring, what are some ways that you can make this more, like, are these emergency drills recorded, video, like, is that provided on Metro's YouTube channel? Is there ways that the public could be more involved or see, like, be more aware that these things are happening? And for the computer-based training, I know it's for the staff. Is there anything similar for the public? I don't know if any rider would really be interested in spending time training themselves on this, but I don't know, with the recent terrorist attacks in Brussels. And yeah, I think it's in the mind of the public, and I think it'd be useful, especially at this point in time, to, yeah, it might be more digestible or more palatable for the public to get invested in training, especially now. And if are there any push notification systems if we do have the numbers of riders that, in case something does happen, like a active shooter situation, where riders can be notified in real time that something is occurring or not?
Okay. As far as are these drills recorded? We follow the Homeland Security Exercise Program plan for that, so it's following the federal guidelines for conducting these drills. We usually do a hot wash after the drills, and then we prepare an after-action report when the drills are done. And that's shared certainly internally, and it's shared with the Tri-State Oversight Committee and certainly the FTA oversight as well on that. If you notice, our Office of Media Relations does a wonderful job of getting some of the local media outlets out to our exercises where they're videotaping those things, and that's kind of the news for the Sunday if it's a slow news day where they're putting all that out there. I don't think we record them ourselves as far as the entire exercise as well, but there are parts where we do videotape that.
And we'll certainly talk to the media. I mean, that's a good idea. Yeah. We'll talk to the media folks about trying to do some of that YouTube video stuff too.
Yeah, some of the training.
Said the old man.
Yeah, some of the training of the community groups, we've been involved with the community emergency response teams for a number of years with all the different jurisdictions, and we've been training them on, it's usually about a three-hour block, or actually it's two sessions on Metro CERT, where we teach them a little bit about terrorism, we teach them a little bit about the rail system, and we take them to a rail yard to show them a little bit about the trains, because these are they're regular riders, but they belong to the community CERT teams, mm-hmm. and then we give them a little Metro block on that. So that's our community involvement on that part of it. I'm certainly that we probably could extend that out into the other citizens as well, but right now we're still the CERT teams.
Okay. And is there a text notification or anything like similar to that? If
you guys are, and anybody, Metro Information, you're signed up for the e-alerts that we get out there. I will tell you this. There was a situation in Virginia, either a Clarendon or a courthouse station or something like that, where we had some type of a small incipient debris fire or something like that that we had last week, along with a train that was disabled at the station due to a brake problem, which we have that pretty much a lot as well. I will tell you, within 5 minutes of that incident happening, it was all over the media that this train was on fire at the station, and that's the reason it was being evacuated, and that really wasn't what was going on. So that information is being pushed out, and a lot of that's being done by the people that are there on these trains that are pushing some of these messages out. So you the community gets real-time information when something happens in the Metro very quickly.
From like the official source?
Maybe not from an official source, but certainly from the customers that are riding the trains, the passengers and stuff. Yeah, they're getting that out there. And a lot of times it's not vetted. You know what I mean? And we don't want to put out any information that's not correct at all. And sometimes it takes a little while to get the proper information, so we put out the right messaging out there as well.
Thank you. And my usual reminder, we're over their time, but we're going to keep asking the people that had their takes up, and just as brief as possible so that we can all leave here at 8:30 or somewhere near that. Jeff.
Quick question, and thank you again for your presentation. So what has been the feedback from first responders on the training that they're receiving? Do they feel like they're more prepared after receiving training? Is there, what's the mechanism that Metro is doing to collect feedback from them after training?
Well, we take, we get everybody, both our volunteer players and all the fire department folks, they all fill out a feedback form. So we get that from them. And we go through the after action process, like you said, but generally, we without fail, we get very good. The ones that are there think it's excellent. But we have to, one of our challenges, our opportunities, is that we only touch a segment of each jurisdiction's first responders whenever we do an exercise. So in Alexandria, we might have, we touched maybe half of their shift that was on duty. So two shifts, three shifts, and the other half of the shift that was working that day are not involved. So the ones that get it, it's excellent. You know, there's so much more benefit to being out on the roadway and actually, you know, performing within the environment they would perform in. So without fail, we get excellent reviews on that portion of it. How well they retain it, we don't know until the next time that particular crew goes to an incident.
Yeah, and one of the things that we've been doing, and pretty successfully, we're getting a lot of good feedback from the first responders, is after the exercise is over, there's only a certain group that goes down to these trains that are stuck between the stations that were either mitigating the problem, you know, evacuating the people off. But after the exercise is over, Denton and his team always take all of the first responders that came to the drill to the scene as well to get them that hands-on experience around the train that's disabled, what to look out for, to walk on the track, because they don't see that a whole lot. And that's been very, very we've got a lot of good feedback from that, and they really appreciate that, because a lot of these jurisdictions don't have many metro incidents at all, and they rarely get on our tracks. So it's good for them. Yeah.
Will, the perfect attendance person.
Thanks, Will.
By bike, by night, whatever way it means, it takes to get there. These are real quick. First, commendations for, you know, the team, because of course I know this is a lot of hard work for you all, so by all means, you know, I don't think anybody should take it lightly. And I will put a flag in Bob's hat because of the fact that he's always Mr. Personality before the drill starts. the other short things that I had is that this drill, out of all the others that I've attended, I felt that the team had a little bit more of a sense of urgency about them. So I don't know if anybody put some fire under anybody or not, but out of the other drills, it was really rather matter of fact, but this one seemed a little bit more okay. Maybe it's because there's more people, more agencies involved, but that was noticeable, at least by me. And then the last thing I had, the other thing you were talking about, the smoke drill. I think that is going to be important for not just the first responders, because of course a lot of times we don't realize how people are going to react when smoke is in the air. And I know generally what people are going to do is the first instinct is to run. And the first instinct should be to drop to the floor where the air is at. But I think it's important that it is done, because even the people that are going to be actors, it'll be, you know, important role for them to see that this is what you really need to do and stop thinking about running, you know, first. So, and this is one last thing that I've been saying for a long time, and hopefully one day that it actually comes to fruition, is the call box buttons have to be addressed, because I know Barbara says she's seen a couple that the signage has, you know, been a little bit different, but the majority of them that I've seen throughout the system is that they just tell people to press the button to call the operator. They don't say anything about releasing the button, and people are going to be pressing the button for dear life, you know, in an emergency situation, thinking that, okay, why isn't somebody responding back to me? Metro sucks, I'm going to die, you know, the whole nine. It's just going to be drama for real. So that's all I have. And again, thank you all for doing this.
Were you on the train, Will?
Yes.
So let me ask you, another one of Bob's good ideas, which I don't say too often, was when we set these up, we sometimes have a lull between when the players go out to the wherever the thing is going to happen to where it actually happens, and that's based on other work that has to be done. So in this instance, we did a little tutorial. I did it. I probably went through it a little faster. I know it was difficult because of the training and how we did it, but did you see value in that, or did you think that worked well?
No, I thought it was low. I mean, I know that there's low because of
our general manager, Mr. Wiedefeld, was at the Forest Glen drill, and that was I think the first drill that I think he came to since being here, and he kind of lit a fire under us a little bit. So that may be why you see that. On that. And one of the things I think that like Denton said is when we load the train, the instant train with our customers, our players, and take it down, it takes us about 45 minutes to bring the power down, get everything where it needs to be before we actually start. So that's a great time to talk to you folks about how things work, if you know what I mean. Just like we're doing with the firefighters afterwards, the same thing with you guys on the train. If there's any questions, it's a great time to do that. Okay?
Thank you. Denise? I don't think you're coming through on the mic. It doesn't seem to me.
Sorry about that. I thought I heard you say that in the event of a real event that this would impact thousands of riders. So my question is there any coordination in these drills with the local hospitals and their personnel that will have to treat the riders after an event?
Mm-hmm. So when we plan these exercises, we start with the jurisdiction to get a good multidiscipline team, both from the jurisdiction and from Metro, and that's where we have our objectives. So we have some objectives, they have some objectives. It doesn't always include patients, but in this Eisenhower Avenue exercise, it did. So they had 8 or 10 patients that they simulated transporting. They treated a lot of people on scene, and then as part of that, they practiced hospital notification and patient tracking.
Great.
So we always have that as an option. I know we're going to be doing it in some of the upcoming ones, so indeed we do that.
Okay, thank you. And I have one final question real quick. I thought I heard Bob say, mention a term, hot wash after the drill. What does that mean?
Hot wash is pretty much what we do after the exercise is over. We try to get everybody while they're still there and just do a 50,000-foot level of how the drill went. Good things, bad things, opportunities for improvement at a 50,000-foot level while we got everybody together. And that's usually done after all our exercises. Yep.
Lorraine. Oh, you had it up at one time, I thought. I misunderstood. I think I missed Christine then.
Thank you. I participated also in the last drill, and it was my first one here. However, my background is participating in lots of drills and safety and training in the aviation industry. So I wanted to just back up a couple of comments that were made. Major was talking about our experience with, and it was not your issue, but the lack of communication from the operator of the train. So I see the lack of communication twofold. One side is the operator, it's a common problem, just riding daily with the intercom system. So in the case of this drill, I think we heard, we were saying every third word. We did not hear the instructions.
Yeah, okay.
So if we were in a real life emergency, it would have been panic and chaos from that side. And then secondly, the communication from the responder side where Major was going with is that my background in my training, train like you fly, fly like you train. And so when I understand there was things that were going on before they actually entered the train where you were dealing with the exercise, but when they started entering the train, shouting the emergency's here, letting the people know, because in a real emergency, these people would have been panicking and flipping out and who knows, running out doors where they shouldn't have been.
Right.
So they need to know that the emergency, once they arrived on scene, they were there and provide some direction and instructions. And I think in a real world case, that would help to calm some people down a little bit anyways. Joe had made a comment, and ironically, it's something I had been thinking about as a new member of the council. I think about I work on safety and technical training. So perhaps using social media, but a brief, quick, maybe a 10-question quiz. I'm not trying to define what it should be, but something based around safety, like how well do you know to handle an emergency situation on Metro? That's just an example, but a quick, brief, something through social media where people can either, I call it an ounce of knowledge, briefly read something, you know, answer a question or a couple of questions on it, and help reinforce his knowledge. And if you heard me say earlier when Mr. Voigtfeld was here, but at the time of an emergency or evacuation is not the time that people should be learning how to deal with it. And anyways, thank you again. I enjoyed the participating in the drill, and I look forward to two more.
Sure.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Debbie.
I don't know if you covered it at the top of the presentation, but do you have a counterpart or similar type of OEM policies and procedures for emergencies with bus service and bus routes and bus-related things, not just the rail?
Yeah, typically, in fact, on the Silver Line exercises that we did in 2014, the pre-revenue phase one of the Silver Line that we did, Fairfax Connector is the major bus provider out there for that service. So we actually involve Fairfax Connector and the Metro bus people in that exercise as far as setting up an emergency bus shuttle operation on that. With this particular drill that we just did in March, we used Dash from Alexandria City.
I think maybe I didn't phrase my question correctly. So when you have emergency situations on Metrorail, here's this, here's that, we're going to do this. What about when there's an emergency on the Metro bus system? Not augmenting your things with shuttles and stuff, but I've been in several situations where there were emergency situations out on the buses or at like hubs like Ballston Metro. Mm-hmm. You've got a lot of buses above ground, and it's a big hub. And if there was an emergency situation in that area, do you guys have protocols and procedures in place to address those kind of things?
A couple points. The bus loops, wherever stations had bus loops, they were active participants in that emergency response evacuation planning. So in that regard, they are. Bus also has a full set of SOPs, standard operating procedures that they use for when they have emergencies. And we also train first responders in the different style of buses we have, the diesel electrics, the CNG buses. So we do training with the first responders for them how to access the bus, get in and out of the doors, how to shut off the systems and things like that. Yeah. So there is, that stuff does exist. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, and one of the best things I think on the bus side is when we have these rail shutdowns that we've had for a number of years when we're doing the track maintenance out there, that mimics what we're doing in a real emergency a lot of times, is how we do the workaround when the tracks are shut down. So the buses are always practicing that part of it as well. The buses are always practicing that when we do these shutdowns, because the buses replace the trains when we do that. So when we have a real emergency, it's almost like it's normal, you know, for them.
Bob.
I'm interested in how well prepared you think that the average rail rider is for an emergency. To that end, do you think that the signage in the car is adequate to educate the average rider? Secondly, do you think the intercom system is adequate to serve an emergency as a way to communicate with the riders? And third, is there an emergency lighting system in each car?
Yeah.
So those are my three questions.
Yeah.
Generally.
Okay. Yeah. as far as the signage on the cars, you know, you have your standard signage, you know, no eating, drinking, smoking, things like that.
Yeah.
At the center doors. 3 and 9, you'll have that emergency evacuation instruction that's on those doors, the center doors, to if you have to get off the train, how to get off the train. The intercoms on the trains, as you well know, sometimes they work well, sometimes they don't work good at all. The new 7000 series trains that we have certainly work very well, and that's been a problem for a long time. And for the train operators, a lot of times when the train operators have an issue on the train where the train may be disabled or something, they're trying to work through the problem, where they're trying to tell, sometimes when they're trying to tell that problem, it doesn't get to every rider on all the cars sometimes. And walking back through the train, where we have some operators that are very good, some aren't so good, that are informing the passengers, hey, this is what's going on, you know, bear with us a little bit while we work through this problem. I think we need to do a better job at that. As far as the regular rail passenger, are they trained up to know what to do? I would say I find two types of customers out there. We have the savvy customers that pretty much know the metro system and the bus system as well. They know where to stand on the trains. They know what doors to be by to get there, their escalator and all that kind of stuff. And then we have the people that come into town that are just looking in awe at, you know, how nice this system really is. But when you find out on a lot of these instances, most people are looking for somebody to give them direction as what to do on these. Somebody in uniform, whether it be a station manager, a train operator, a police officer, or something like that, because a lot of these people are followers. They will follow folks. And sometimes when people make the wrong decision, like pop a side door on a train in a tunnel, people will go out in that tunnel to follow them because they think that's the proper thing to do. And that could be the worst thing to do in some cases. So your average rider, I think the savvy commuter, maybe a little bit better. Our visitors that come into town, you know, now this time of year is a really busy time for us with all the cherry blossom visitors that are coming to town. Sometimes they don't know what to do, and they're looking for somebody to give them guidance on that. As far as the CERT teams we talked about, which only make up a small portion of what's riding out there, I think they're pretty well prepared for that because they're in that business anyway, or that emergency response. But I think we probably could do better on that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And every train car has a battery backup for critical systems, which includes emergency lighting on each car. They say 2 hours. It may or may not be 2 hours. So your radio systems, your critical life safety systems, not heat, not air conditioning, but radios and lights, 2 hour battery backup on every car.
Every car. Let you do that. It's not the full light set. There's certain lights in each car that will operate on that battery backup power, but it is some lighting on there, yeah.
Is there any place that the average rider could go online to figure out how to evacuate from a rail car? What to do? How to open up the doors?
Is the video that was made?
I think.
Yeah.
Out there?
I'd have to look, but I believe on the WMATA website, if you look under rail, I think there's a safety link there that may have some of that information.
There was the video.
The animated video.
It's still there.
Yeah.
You think it? Have you looked at it?
It's.
I'd like to look at it. I'm sure it's not. You have to try and reach the greatest amount of people you can. I'm sure it's just about how to open the door. You know, what side to get out on, that sort of thing.
What I'm getting at, you guys, you're the professionals, okay? You would know what to do if you got stuck in a rail car, if there was an emergency. I'm not sure if I would have the slightest idea. And I've been riding the rails for 35 years. So my suggestion is to take a look at the video, take a look at the signage in the rail cars and say, if you were the average rider and there was an emergency and you looked at, you wouldn't look at the video, but if you were the average rider and you looked at the signage and you could see it because there was still some light on, would it give you enough information to make a decision quickly? And, you know, I think you always need, with all these kinds of procedures, you always need another set of eyes to look at things, mm-hmm. You know. The airlines have got it down pretty well. You know, after taking hundreds of flights, I think I pretty much know what to do if there's a problem on the ground. Can't jump out of the airplane at 20,000 feet. Yeah, I figured it out. It might be a good model for you. Occasion to fall. Anyway, that's just my thought.
Thanks. Okay.
Chris.
Well, thank you so much.
Now I'm stuck with all the people that already talked, so you know.
I'm being told to please be brief, but I will not because I was at the drill and I will provide the feedback from the drill. While I understand these drills are mainly to train first responders, if you're not training WMATA staff, you're failing at half of the drill. And I have to say that from my point of view in that drill, I was appalled at how WMATA staff handled the situation. Appalled. Never once did a train operator tell us what was going on. He may have tried over that intercom, but he did not tell us what was going on. His whole focus was on the train. And like I told GM Wiedefeld earlier, we're not cargo, we're people. And I got to tell you, after like 5 minutes, I would have been pulling the emergency door release and going into the tunnel. No joke. Those trains, in our car, I think there was maybe 10 to 20 people. Those trains should be packed with WMATA staff who have been told, pretend you're a writer and look at this situation from the point of view of a writer. Are you being communicated with? I mean, I'm not trying to throw that train operator from the drill under the train, so to speak. But every train operator needs to understand that we aren't cargo, and we are going to respond in ways that the authority doesn't like when we're not communicated with. And if the intercom isn't working, I point out to him, intercom's not working. He did not adjust how he communicated with us. He didn't go through the cars telling us what was going on, please be patient, nothing. There were people on that train who had visible injuries. Never once did he come through and say, are you okay? Are you okay? Someone could have a concussion. That's not a visible injury. Never once did the WMATA staff care about the people on that train. And then afterwards, and this will be me being brief, afterwards, once we got down to the ground and were put into our green, yellow, red areas, we were just forgotten about. We stood there. No one from WMATA was there, a station manager. Nobody, I understand in a normal situation there would be maybe a station manager there. No one was there saying, please wait here. We want to debrief you. We want to ask you questions. You know, you're wearing a green band, so you don't need medical attention. Let us, you know, talk to you about what happened and ask you how we could do better. There wasn't even any indication of what to do from there. We stood around just going, well, what next? What next? You guys have been doing these drills for a long time. I expected a lot better, and you know, this was my first drill, the only one since I've started, so I guess I have 100% also. And I plan on being at the other ones, but really focus the staff on these drills as opposed to the first responders.
Okay, thank
you. And that, I will tell you, Chris, that is a part of our exercise. It didn't go like it should, like the plan says to go, as far as what to do once the fire department is done with customers, if they're not going to the hospital, how do we get them to continue on their journey wherever they're trying to get to? And that did not go like we would have hoped it would, and we recognize that. Hopefully you provide your feedback, both written and besides
today. I ran out of room on the pages.
Excellent. Nothing wrong with that. That's what we need. That's what we need. It's a learning. We're trying to learn. You know, so we're trying to get everybody, you know, so we need that. And so we'll certainly take that back. And that is part. That was part of this exercise, and as you witnessed, it didn't go as well as we would have liked.
Thank you.
Sure.
Clarence.
The only thing I'm going to mention is that, kind of going back to the point Jim made, is that I feel as if overall you guys do a tremendous amount of work putting this stuff in there. And I think in general, WMATA needs to do a better job of telling its story. And I know we shouldn't get to a point where we're just relying on the news agencies of like doing that for you, because like you said, they're only going to fill it in there if it's like a boring thing happening on Sunday. So just different ways of like if posting up on the YouTube channel. I'm always a really big person on like in the Metro, because I know Metro Talks have mentioned how oftentimes like the advertising they don't have a lot, but if you did like slides of different trainings that have happened, so just as you're driving into work, you can kind of see the work and energy investment that you guys are already doing goes a long way in helping people know that there is a tremendous amount of work and labor that goes into keeping the space safe and training for there, that people aren't just filling in the gaps, because they might hear that the station's closed, but they don't know that it's because there is a training session that's going on over there, because I think that helps a lot. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. It's a tremendous amount of work that goes into putting these drills on. Absolutely. Yeah.
Mr. Goffin.
Well, first of all, we want to thank you for all the tremendous work that you do. I think we all really appreciate it. It was also especially interesting to see what came out of the drills. My question to you is, what do you think were the biggest pain points that we learned coming out of the drills? And by that I mean, what do you think were the two or three biggest things that you think we are underprepared for in the event of an emergency?
I think it's different with which each exercise. Certainly, some of the jurisdictions that respond to Metro all the time, you can see at ease in our system, you know. But they've experienced it. They've run the sick people every day. They've run the little smoking insulators. They've run these little rubbish fires. They've run where people have been struck by trains. They've run that and through the training throughout the years that we do at our training center, you see that where we train them throughout the year. But when you do these exercises, they're much more versed on that. Some of these departments that do not run Metro much at all, then you can see where they don't have that experience because they haven't been in there. And I'm not saying, I'm not going to tell you that that's going to prevent anybody from responding up and helping you in a timely manner. It's not going to do that at all, but you can see that. You can watch them and see how they react if they're not that familiar with our system when they actually get on live track. Because you got to remember, they don't get to experience that very often. You have live third rail that we tell them is live, you know what I mean? They have to check it and do all that kind of stuff. You have a train that's down in a tunnel somewhere that they got to go fetch. And that makes them a little bit nervous sometimes. And when we start introducing smoke in this, it's going to make them a little bit even more nervous on that sort of stuff. Theater smoke, yeah. So communications issues usually are what we find. Unified command issues, trying to make sure that we establish a good unified command of these scenes. I think the triage side of this Alexandria drill went very well. Chris, I believe with you afterwards. Maybe not so well. There was no follow-up after that.
That was the one. My main takeaway from this last one that was kind of personally disappointing is that we didn't really deal with the customer afterwards.
Right.
And that's on several different levels.
Right.
Within the police department, within rail staff, bus staff, OEM player, and right. local jurisdiction. Because our customer is their taxpayer, so everybody has some skin in the game when it comes to taking care of the customer.
Right. So
that's something we continue to right. work on.
So doing as much as we can to exercise the different elements of an emergency that the responders have to do, I think, is critical for us. Okay. Yep.
Jim, you're the only one separating us from the rest of the agenda.
Well, I have waited. Anyway, one of the new realities of some of the recent incidents that happened in Europe is that simultaneous attacks have occurred at multiple locations. Are you planning, as far as your future drills and practices, that you're going to have to cope with multiple incidents simultaneously in different parts of the system?
We are. The National Capital Region has actually made the coordinated complex attack scenario their main focus for the upcoming year's time of the Urban Air Security Initiative, the federal grant money that first responders and folks get. Right. So we'll be a major player in that exercise series, including what I think they haven't really identified all the scenarios, but of course rail is a common target, you know,
right.
throughout the world. The
right.
bus and train and subway systems are a number one target.
And whether or not your command and control systems can handle multiple
exactly.
you know, emergencies.
And you know the challenge in this area. We're dealing
yeah.
with three different state-level organizations.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of people think they're in charge. And,
right.
And, of course, every federal agency right here in D.C.
And you're having to split your attention across multiple
absolutely.
Things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's more of a challenge than these single-incident kinds of scenarios.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Major, do you want to do the close here?
Sure. First, I just want to thank you all for coming here. From a parking lot conversation to a full rack presentation, it shows a dedication of you and your staff, and it shows that WMATA is very serious about safety and what we need to do in case of emergency. So thank you for being here. Just in summarizing some things here, we need to communicate a lot more with our riders. You heard some of the issues that are coming up, and I saw you taking copious notes, so I'm sure it's going to come true. Keep drilling as much as possible. I'm an advocate of that. And from what some folks have said here, it might be a good idea to also have a staff-specific drill to teach our staff, the WMATA staff and drivers and such, what to do. That might be a good idea in the long run. But I think the RAC also, we could work on Bob's idea about improving the verbiage so that we can train our riders to be good citizens when it comes to emergencies and making sure they don't run out the door when they're not supposed to. So we all have work to do. Thank you for coming here. I think we need to partner a little bit more.
Well,
and,
I'm going to say, I don't know how Bob feels about it, but it's okay because I'm high on the food chain. you know, we would certainly be open to having a representative of the RAC on our exercise planning team.
Yes,
that'll be
that'd
more
be wonderful.
Meetings for you to go to, feel like you're working for Metro, mm-hmm. but we have some, the AAC participates, and we would be open to having a representative from the RAC participate
absolutely.
As well.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank
absolutely.
You. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and wonderful job. Thanks.
Yeah.
All right, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now, we are a half an hour over our allotted time. Before we continue, I want to ask, if we were to go beyond 8:30, who would we lose? Who do we have to lose if we go? We're going to lose at least a couple more. Okay, so we need to keep that in mind, because I obviously, this was a very popular subject for people to ask questions about, but we still do have time for our public to speak and other business, so we just have to keep that in mind as we go forward. I'm sorry, committee chairs, you may have less time than you might have wanted.
Let's get to it.
Okay. All right, so the agenda, you can see we're going to now do public comment and then move on to minutes and so forth. If any objections to the agenda? Hearing none. We will consider it approved. Public comment. I understand we have one public commenter, Jeff, I believe. Jeff Larimore, is he here?
Right. Barbara, I just want to confirm that Leroy Morgan did leave.
Yes.
Okay.
He, I just want to confirm that. I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
All right. Good evening. Given that it's after 8, I will try to be brief, although I also feel like since every Blue Line rider every month spends 2 hours more per waiting for trains than every other line, taking 2 minutes of your time, I don't feel too bad about that. So there are really just two things I want to share with you. The first is just following up on what I mentioned last time to remind you that to take a look at the latest vital signs data. It is the 15th straight month since the Silver Line opened, so every single month of data that the Blue Line has failed to fall below Metro's maximum crowding per car. So I think that I'm encouraged by the response that Mr. Wiedefeld had to Colin's question, but I think that it's been nearly 2 years without action, and riders are continuing to be told to be patient, so I really do hope that it's not just on the agenda, but near the top of the agenda. The second thing is just briefly mentioning Chairman Evans' remarks about shutting down a line for 6 months, since he did mention the Blue Line in that. Twice. So I'm going to reserve judgment on that. I know that there's plans coming, and I want to see the details of that. But that being said, I do think that this sort of builds on the fact that there's a serious lack of trust of Metro among Blue Line riders who feel like they've been Metro's punching bag for the last several years. So I think that just emphasizing that the choices of what's being referenced do make a difference, and people paid attention to that when he said the Blue Line multiple times. I also just want to emphasize the need, if and when any lines are shut down, the need for Metro to put forth a plan not just for the how to minimize rate impacts during the closure, but how to bring riders back after they develop new transit patterns. I think that with 12-minute headways and a serious overcrowding, there should be serious concerns about riders not coming back if they develop new patterns for 6 months, and frankly, I wouldn't fault them for that. So I think that part of any information about a closure should include a guarantee that when the Blue Line reopens, it would involve shorter headways when that happens. I think that would go a long way in helping Blue Line riders be willing to endure the challenges they'd be asked to face during that period. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. I know it's something you're very passionate about, as is Colin, as I am as well. And I have had a conversation with Lynn Bowersox in the last week or two that I shared a little bit with Colin. That I think that with some people, there's a tendency to equate, well, we can't do anything about the Blue Line because Rosslyn can only handle so many people. But I made sure that that is not what is blocking people, that 8-car trains don't require any more trains through the tunnel, that sort of thing. So we're trying to look beyond just, you know, how many go through Rosslyn.
And I want you to know that I do appreciate all the work that this committee is putting into you. But I feel like, as I said,
The results. Thank you. We have two sets of minutes in front of us. We had had an audio problem for the February meeting, so we did not approve them last time. So are there any adjustments to be made to the February minutes?
Motion to approve.
In motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Amen. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. The March minutes, Chris?
Yeah. March minutes, hold on, 5 minutes. We had a very robust discussion about what's now known as Select Pass. That didn't make it into the minutes at all. And the committee reports, I think, could use a little bit more detail other than, yes, we had a committee report, maybe include what those reports were. And then also the public comment, Leroy asked about holiday operating hours. Later in that meeting, I provided an answer, but he wasn't there for it. So this might be an opportunity if he wanted to look at the minutes and say, oh, someone did answer, that would be helpful.
Okay. Joy, did we have audio fully for that meeting in March? Okay, so you're able to do some enhancing, and we can work together on that. Not well, yeah, we're not looking for every word, obviously. I think if we are to do that, though, we would need to table the approval of that for, so I don't know if we need a motion. Do we need a motion? We're just going to wait on that one. Thank you very much. Okay, on to, oh, yes, we have new RAC members. we all heard your names. I think we need to have just a very, very brief statement, not everything you're wanting to accomplish with the RAC, but if you can just say something about where you're from and what pattern we all know you're happy to be here, so you don't have to tell us that. So very brief. Christine.
Hi, good evening. Christine Madden, representing Arlington County. I think from my two comments that I made this evening, it expresses my interest in safety for the passengers, and the ability to evacuate with some knowledge of how to evacuate, how not to evacuate, et cetera. So I'm interested in, of course, many parts of the RAC, but I really look forward to some safety enhancements. Thank you.
Mr. Gofford, remind me what word it is your first name rhymes with.
Sitza Gofford. If it helps, my first name Sitza rhymes with pizza.
That's it.
I often
you.
Tell my friends.
I do not remember that.
It's a very cheesy pun.
Thank you. I'll remember from now on.
So Sitza Gofford, representing the District of Columbia. I actually grew up in Paris, France, which has, as some of you might know, actually a very good public transit system. And so I'm actually particularly interested in looking at how other cities across America and across the world solve the same transit issues that we are facing right now. Because every city, or many cities across the world, have very old and, you know, struggling metro and bus systems. But they're able to find ways around it. And I think if we look at those best practices, we can definitely find solutions. Also interested in issues of accessibility and making sure that the metro and buses are, you know, affordable, accessible to people with disabilities, and especially people in communities that we might not serve particularly well yet. So very excited to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Jamie.
Jamie Woodside, also representing the District of Columbia. My main interests are safety, of course, and also enhancing customer service.
Hi, this is Joe, and along with Sitza and Jamie, I'm representing the District of Columbia, and I find WMATA to be somewhat reliable, but I really love to make the experience a more enjoyable and delightful one for our riders, because, yeah, a lot of the news, and it makes me feel like WMATA isn't that great if I look at the news, but I like to see the opposite be true in my experience of rides every day. And how do we make sure that we're basing our designs and everything based on their needs, obviously. And fixing the little problems like the intercoms and things like that can be fixed and should be able to be fixed quite quickly. Okay.
Thanks. Jeff.
Good evening. Once again, my name is Jeffrey Coma, and I'm representing Fairfax County. Not to talk too much, but some things that I definitely see of great concern are customer service, affordability, and accessibility. And I think those are the main issues, and I think those will be solved, a lot of the smaller issues, but I look forward to working with everybody.
Thank you. Now, normally we would go around the table, we'd all tell you who we are, but we're not doing that tonight. And, you know, the social half hour is always available, so I encourage everybody to come, and if you, or even after the meeting, walk up and say, hey, I haven't met you, I'd like to talk to you. And that goes for the new people doing that, for the old people doing that, so thank you. Chair's report for March. Okay, it's in there. You can read it.
Can we have a comment on that real quick?
Sure.
I was a little concerned about the rose-tintedness of the emergency response paragraph, and I understand it's your chair report, but before we tell the board things like, oh, we were just happy to be there, maybe we can provide some more critical feedback to the board beyond that, or wait a month. I don't know what your plan was there.
Yeah, to be honest, I had no idea that you had that feedback. You know, I had no idea. We'll have to figure that out. I don't have an answer, and you guys aren't going to wait. You won't wait for it tonight. but thank you for your feedback on that. I want to just talk about a couple of things on the board meetings, board committee meetings. I will echo Vital Signs report. It's out there. You should all read it. If you don't read it every time, you should read it this time. There is a report out there on the website for the whole year, 2015, everything from all the things that got better, elevators, escalators, all the things, virtually everything else that didn't get better because of the extraordinary year we had. So it is, if you can't find it, ask me, I'll tell you. Also, as you may know, the board approved the budget for 2017 fiscal, and it approved it without the proposed taking bus fares off the bus. So that was something that was widely criticized and a lot of concern, justifiable concern about that. So I think everything that we were looking for was in there. there was extensive time at the last board meetings. Safety committee talked about the McPherson fire, and there's information also on the website. And I can actually, if you want, I can send you some links to this stuff that I'm saying I recommend rather than you all scour. It'd be good for you to scour the web, but I will send some links to both the Vital Signs, the McPherson fire report, and then the inspections and repairs of cables and so forth, because at the time we had the meeting, there was not an answer yet. A full investigation had not yet been completed to know why there were so many inspections over the last year, and then this situation existed. So that's about the board. RAC committee reports, Mr. Budget and Finance.
I have brief bullet points. The FY17 budget has been approved, takes effect July 1st. Programs like Select Pass are already being rolled out in pilot form, and we're looking forward to other things like the 15-minute grace period for entering and exiting the same station, which would go into effect July 1st, to my understanding. Our meetings have been moved to 1 hour prior to the customer service committee meetings, so they will now be at 5:30 on the second Thursday of every month. We're looking to have someone from the planning department come to the April 14th meeting to present Select Pass officially to the RAC, provide a recap of the feedback received. Here are concerns about the pilot execution, so that is coming up on the 14th. Going forward, we're going to be looking at things to go into the FY18 budget, so small changes like the station grace period, those kinds of ideas, we want to try to get those into the FY18 discussion soon. And at the AAC meeting Monday night, GM Wiedefeld actually mentioned his phrasing, throwing out the budget in terms of planning for the FY18 budget. So,
who said that?
Wiedefeld.
Oh.
So I think just because the budget is the way it is doesn't mean that's the way it's going to be going forward. So I kind of take that as a good sign, and we definitely want to be part of that conversation.
Real quick, Chris, Shyam, and Michael confirmed that they'll be there, but it might be one or both. I'm not sure yet.
Sure. So that's fine. Okay, customer service. Okay. I don't know. I was just looking. You're all over here.
Over here. All right. Very, very brief. We discussed the MTPD contact information on the trains specifically. placement, and we had a little bit of concern that there wasn't strong visibility. So there's presence of it, but we want to see larger print, basically, so that it's more visible in an emergency situation. People could say, oh, there's the information right there, you know, instead of trying to scrunch their eyes to see it. Additionally, we did have a discussion about being contacted, the RAC specifically being contacted from the public via email. So that situation has been taken care of, and thank you, Jason. And then, yes?
When you're done, I have a
question. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
When you're done, I have a quick question.
Oh, okay. All right. I just have
one.
Ask it. Have you, your button question, mm-hmm. has that been submitted yet?
Yes.
And you got a we got a response?
No, I have not.
We got a response.
How about the police and the coordination between the police, the metro, between the transit police and the locals in terms of dispatching when there's a 911 call?
No.
Has it been submitted?
Jason would know that one.
I followed up with Chief a couple times now. He has assured me that he's getting me the responses. The questions were definitely submitted. Barbara was copied on that.
Yeah.
Working with them, I'll follow up again this week with them. So
I'm not sure we asked the question on the buttons. It was more
no, I included
it was
that
more
in my
feedback. It was feedback saying if it's where they're not consistent, they need to be. I will say that I know we've gone back and forth on this. I have never yet been on a train in the last whatever many weeks where I've seen what you've described. I only see the ones that accurately say don't hold the button.
So I'm going to take you on some trips.
All right, next meeting.
True. Then the last thing we talked about, which we pretty much openly agreed, at least in our meeting, that we were going to have public participation a little bit more adamant, because we felt as if that was key to the process, because of course they're important with customer service. So, yeah.
Okay. Colin.
And speaking of public participation, at our last meeting, I think the members of the public outnumbered the members of our committee. So in addition to a presentation about potential safety applications and electronic solutions, focused on safety and emergency response, we also had a pretty robust discussion with some members of the third-party developer community around data issues and, kind of a recap of the Metro Hack Night. But really, I think the discussion focused primarily around how can we get to the point where we have a true mechanism for tracking data issues, and, that's kind of a two-way communication between WMATA staff in the IT department and the third-party development community. Also discuss the potential for some sort of an online forum to discuss those issues and resolve them. Our committee has compiled a number of requests for information on various issues related to our work plan, and those have been forwarded to Jason, and he's in the process of trying to identify the appropriate. I copied you. It was right before the meeting. So he's in the process of identifying the appropriate staff to respond to those. Barbara and I got ourselves invited to the Council on Government's Future on. Well, Bob was invited for some other reason. I don't know why he was there. As a function of his professional life, but Barbara and I got ourselves invited to the Council on Government's Future of Metro meeting, which I think was raised at a previous RAC meeting. Mm-hmm. So, in response to that request and a tweet that I saw, I asked if anyone was going to be representing writers there. So I think there was a pretty interesting discussion. I mean, I think it was useful. I'll be interested to see what plans come out of that. But I just thought I'd mention that in my report. And I think that's it.
Leadership and governance. I did circulate some things. I don't think we have time to walk through all of it, but I did circulate to all of you the leadership and governance team's work plan for the year. And if any of you are interested in participating in any of those items, please let me know. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, go find the email I sent 2 days ago. also in that same email, I was trying to encourage participation in providing feedback on two different things. One is the new bus ETA. I know we have some really active bus riders here. Do we have anybody that either saw what I wrote or is aware of it that is participating? Can I see some hands? Do we have people that are going to be great? So I'd actually like to write those names down. Bus ETA. What? No, bus ETA. Bus ETA. It's the. Oh, if you are if you will be using the application and providing feedback on it, we would love to do that as a group or and individually. I don't really care, but we want to. We have an opportunity to do that, and I thought rather than have a specific committee of our established standing committees take it, we would just say let's have an ad hoc group that's the big bus riders that check that sort of thing all the time. And so can I just get somebody yell out some names to me? I think
Christine,
I saw
Lorraine, Christine, Jamie, Valerie, Denise. You're not that fast.
Okay, I'm almost that fast. Say those names again. Colin, who'd I leave out? Colin, Chris, Jamie, Christine, Valerie, and Denise.
Lorraine.
And Clarence. Okay, thank you very much. That's the ETA. You can do it directly. Bus ETA. I'm sorry, that's bus ETA. That's bus ETA. The fair, the select fair. Select pass, right? Formerly known as name your own price, whatever. It isn't accommodating all price points, but there are ways that, for instance, if it has two price points and the high one is four something. If you spend more than that, you could still do it. If you're a regular, like 4 or 5 days a week rider, you can still do it. It's just that each time you have to pay extra. But it also means any shorter than that are free. You know, if you do other things, you can run errands and not worry about getting on and off, that sort of thing. Anybody that thinks they are going to be participating and providing feedback or can do that for this pass?
I have a question.
Sure.
So my question is, I think I can assume that the people receiving government subsidy will not qualify under this program. However, I read through it and I didn't see where it actually identified if you receive a subsidy.
I thought it said it did.
Please come to the budget and finance meeting on April 14th.
Thank you. Okay, let's just say, how many of you have read it and think that you do qualify and will be able to provide feedback on this? Could you raise your hands? Okay, we don't have people. All right, so we'll get some. Okay, well, thanks.
I think I can cover you because this actually came up at the PPP meeting, which
okay.
is.
Can we
get order, please?
Which is the issue of how smart benefits and employer administered benefits interface with this new select pass. And what we seem to have discovered is that if your employer, whether it be the federal government or a private employer, has not enabled the option for you to to direct those funds to a pass,
right,
then you cannot use those smart benefits
for
that purpose. And so it seems in our discussion with the members of the public who are at that committee that there is some work to be done in terms of actually educating employers on how this, on the fact that this exists, A, and B, how to operationalize
it. Especially the smaller the employer, the less likely they would know anything about it.
Well, apparently the federal government is also not sure how to do it.
Jeffrey, did you want to say something about that?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay.
Just
more
one other point.
Will come about that. Yes.
Coming on the metro to the meeting today, there was a poster for this on the metro. Yeah.
On the train.
On the train.
Thank you. Okay. Bear with us for a few more minutes. I hope. Okay. We're going to move on to announcements and roundtable. we know we have more information to get out on the select pass so that you can all join in if you're eligible. Announcements to be made. Anyone? Bob, you have one?
Yeah. On Monday night, Prince George's County and the Montgomery County RAC members are meeting with our board members. When this meeting is over, I hate to extend it anymore. If I could meet with any representatives from Prince George's County and Montgomery County just for 2 minutes over by Jason, I just want to ask you a question.
Great.
You've been informed of this, but there's some almost all the way, not all the information.
Okay, Chris.
Quick things. First of all, where are we on our social media efforts?
I have not heard back. I have talked with the board secretary about getting responses on the stuff, but I don't have them. And you know the last I knew.
Okay.
I haven't been able to talk to anyone at the recent meetings. I don't know.
We're now over 107,000 series rail cars in service. I'd like to try to accelerate gathering feedback on that. So far, that's been assigned to me. I'd love to have help on that if anyone else wants to help. Considering all the safety issues, and just today the FTA came out with more stuff, I would really prefer we again consider creating a safety committee going forward.
I think we have a chair who has volunteered herself. I'm sure of it.
Fantastic.
But we can talk about that, because I'm all for it. We've always said we were. It's just that when it came down to it, we had not enough people that could get their schedules together to do it. So it was absorbed by customer
service. And really, I'm not bringing these things up for discussion so much as just to have them officially on the record. The very last thing we have never mentioned but really needs to be mentioned is Metro needs to look at a better way to live stream all of our public meetings, including board meetings, this one, et cetera. It is not an appropriate system for an agency of this size. And
you're saying even the board meetings?
Yeah. It's the same technology.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other announcements? Do I have... Oh, sorry. So you have to know. This is historically. You can't see the ones over on this side. I can't.
Just a quick announcement, just to put it on record. Virginia folks, let's meet back here in this corner after the meeting. Just 2 minutes. Sorry, folks, but just I have a couple things I want to go through. Thanks.
Anything else? Oh, that was... I thought you were talking about his.
No, but to say that each time you're offered it, you are to complete it because it is trip-based, not customer-based, right? This is an important distinction that oftentimes gets misunderstood. So if you are, for instance, entering at Van Dorn and you get offered a survey and then you come out and you get offered one at Gallery when you're coming home in the evening, you're actually asked to complete both. So we're very excited about the project. You will see announcements, press releases, things of that nature. It's a huge effort and contributes to transit subsidy allocation and our planning efforts internally. So thank you.
How many saw a tweet about this meeting? And everybody can, oh, okay, that's why some of you are here, I gather. And Thaddeus, you have a...
Yes, finally, I wanted to ask all of the DC members about email. if you make sure you're getting all of the email, including the news that goes out, because I want to I'm going to ask anybody to stay after the meeting, but I would communicate with you tomorrow by email and just make sure that you are getting everything that has been sent out and talked about.
Yes. Thank you. I don't know that the brand new members have gotten the work plan, and if you haven't, I'll get it to you. James.
I'd be happy to share it with you. This is a standard instrument with some modifications, some improvements to the design, but we keep it the same for standardization and how the transit subsidy allocation formula works. But I'm happy to share it with you all. Absolutely, I have reams of data that I'm always happy to share with you when asked.
Is there a move to adjourn?
So moved.
So moved and seconded.
Seconded.
We're adjourned. Okay. Thanks to everybody. Thanks for staying late. Thanks to all the public that came and listened. You can speak next time if you want. Sorry you got squeezed. That wasn't my intent. I had no idea the emergency thing was going to take that long. They had more questions for them than they did Paul. Hey. Okay, first of all, he doesn't have right. He's left God. Okay, now I will say.